Before we launch into this week's podcast, I want to let our listeners know about a couple of open positions we have at Coram Deo Church. You listeners are one of the connections we have to the world of Christian leaders and thoughtful Christians in various contexts who might know of people who are interested in stepping into ministry or serving in a different role in ministry. And so here at Coram Deo Church, we're hiring for a director of connections. This is a role that helps people get connected to our church. For a student ministry coordinator, this is a role that obviously oversees student ministry, which is 6th grade to 12th grade in our church. And then we're also hiring for pastoral residents. This is a 2-year residency program that we run to help people who are ready to step into pastoral ministry and just would like a couple years of on-the-job training. Those three roles are open, and you can find out more at cdomaha.com/hiring. So I hope you'll check that out or pass the word to anyone you might know who would have interest. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bob Thune from Coram Deo Church in Omaha, Nebraska. And today I'm here by myself without any of my normal conversation partners for a special TWC commentary episode, AI First versus People First. All of my friends who normally join me on this podcast are out today for various reasons. And so I'm going to use this as an opportunity to reflect on two articles I read recently related to the topic of artificial intelligence. If you're a regular listener to the Wednesday Conversation, you know this is not a new topic. This is something we've talked about in various ways over the course of the past few years. And it's a topic that continues to be on the table for many Christians, no matter what industry you work in. In our own church, we have seen job displacement already, especially for those who work in computer science, in coding industries. Some of the people who are in that industry in our church have already seen their jobs eliminated because of AI, and it's quickly making its way into all kinds of other industries as well. And everybody who pays attention to this says, well, it's certainly going to be a disruptor in our social world and in our vocational worlds. I came across two articles recently about AI that are interesting, and I want to put them in dialogue with one another. The first is in The New Yorker, and August 25th of 2025. The title of the article is The AI Profits Drought and the Lessons of History. The second article is at Mere Orthodoxy on October 13th, and it is called Wendell Berry's Unanswered Question. The first article in The New Yorker is by John Cassidy. The second article at Mere Orthodoxy is by Samuel C. Hurd. They're coming from very different perspectives. What I want to do is sort of go back and forth between these articles, put them in dialogue with each other to help us think about this topic from a Christian perspective. Samuel Hurd, I think, frames the topic helpfully, because the conversation I've been in with many people in our church is simply this: hey, Bob, so what am I supposed to do about AI? In fact, people give me a hard time because in the debate we did on AI on this podcast months ago, I said, hey, I think this opens us up to demonic influence. And so every time I say, oh, I went on ChatGPT and typed this, people are like, oh, so you consulted the demons. So people have definitely not necessarily resonated with my position that AI can be a tool for other spiritual beings. But the question I get most often from people in our church is, hey, how should I interact with AI? What if I have to use it at work? You know, what are the limits and boundaries we ought to be thinking about as Christians? Because, you know, AI is more and more starting to dominate various industries. The contrast Samuel Hurd makes is between AI first and people first. I'm going to read you a section of his article, but he basically says, hey, in many segments of our society, especially startups and tech, the push is to become an AI first organization. And his contention is that as Christians, we need to be people first, and that's going to require us not to be AI first. I think he's basically right about that. The other article in The New Yorker brings forth an interesting reality that I'm starting to see more and more of, which is the fact that all the hype about AI is not currently paying off. Now, that doesn't mean it won't pay off in the future, but I suspect that we are going to see the bubble around AI burst. I think the dramatic investments being made by companies spending hundreds of billions of dollars to win the AI race, I think we're going to see that not produce the results that they expect it to produce. And I'll explain the data behind that here in a minute. Now, again, it's very early, and there are people who disagree with this author and his analysis. But I want to read to you from each of these articles to allow you as a listener to think a little bit more deeply about how we should think about AI, especially as the hype around it continues to get louder in our culture. Samuel Hurd's article at Mere Orthodoxy begins this way. Earlier this year, the language education company Duolingo caused a stir when its CEO, Louis von Ahn, put out a memo announcing his intentions on making Duolingo an AI-first organization. He told his employees that they would begin to phase out contract workers, explaining that they were doing the kind of work that could be handled by AI. Being AI-first, he wrote, means we will need to rethink much of how we work. Making minor tweaks to systems designed for humans won't get us there. It turned out that not everyone was thrilled about these things, and Duolingo faced a considerable amount of backlash for the announcement. This apparently came as a surprise to von Ahn. He wasn't sure why people were targeting Duolingo, since other companies around him were making the same decisions. Over the past year, a number of other companies have indeed begun phasing out workers in a pivot to AI. Earlier in July, Microsoft made the decision to eliminate 9,000 positions after CEO Satya Nadella recently shared that 30% of its code is now being written by AI tools. After cutting 1,000 positions earlier this year, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff recently said that AI technology currently accounts for 30 to 50% of the company's work. IBM recently cut 8,000 employees, mostly concentrated in human resources, to welcome in AI agents to complete tasks. Klarna's CEO, Sebastian Siemiatkowski, said that the company had dismissed 40% of its workforce, including the entirety of its customer service department, so that they could prioritize AI implementation. Even workers who have kept their jobs are now being regularly briefed on how to implement AI and LLMs in their line of work. Browse any major website and you're likely to find a new AI tool to help you carry out your tasks. AI-generated texts now populate our search results before finding links to other pages. We're having trouble discerning whether that post, that image, or that piece of music has been created with AI. The onslaught of an AI-first culture is not a question of if or when. It's happening now. And yet, we feel a state of dissonance and unease about this whole situation. We don't like it when a company says it's going AI first. But then again, why is every institution getting involved in the technology? Why are dozens of companies firing workers to be replaced with AI? Why is every website asking us to interact with their new chatbot? If collectively we find the concept of an AI first culture off-putting, then wouldn't our best course of action be to limit this technology's usage in everyday life? Of course, the answer is that some people do indeed want to create an AI-first culture, but I wager that they stand in the minority. The rest of us remain unconvinced. Even those who regularly promote its purported benefits, the AI optimists among us, would likely shudder at the idea of an AI-first culture. It's harder, I think, for us to explain why we don't like this. And there's the rub. No matter how much we dislike it, an AI-first mindset can still grow in a culture that largely feels opposed to its domination. All it takes is a community that cannot properly justify why its work must be done by people. Now, I'm going to pause there for a moment and make a couple observations about Samuel Hurd's insights here. Number one, he points out that though AI is being pushed on us all the time, we do, I think most of us, feel a resistance to it. We do not want to live in an AI-first culture. Even the people I know who work in industries that are AI-heavy and that are very optimistic about its possibilities still feel a sense of hesitancy about it. And I think that's true across the board. I think he's right that we don't actually want to live in an AI-first culture, but we can't really explain why. We're not sure why we feel conflicted about the growth of AI. He suggests in the next paragraph that what we need to do is answer the following question. Why should people do our work? And that is the question that lies underneath all of our questions about AI. If we can't answer the question, why should people do our work? If the answer is, well, we don't have a good answer to that, then great, let a robot do it. Let a chatbot do it. Let an LLM do it. But if we have a good answer to why people should do our work, then we will be slow to adopt AI, and we will not want to live in an AI-first culture. We'll want to live in a people-first culture. And I think in a people-first culture, AI tools can still exist and be useful, but they serve the people who are first rather than the people serving the tools, which is AI first. Let me go back briefly to the Samuel Hurd article. He writes, by its very definition, an AI first culture is one whose members collectively and repeatedly choose the artificial non-person over the person. So it follows that if this is the sort of culture we're trying to avoid, then we need to choose the person over the non-person. Maybe there is a place for AI chatbots, but this technology would need to remain subservient to the actual choosing of persons if we want to avoid going AI first. In other words, if given the choice between a graphic designer and an AI model, then we need to be willing to choose the designer 6 out of 10 times, or better yet, 9 out of 10 times. Hopefully you see where this is going. To choose a person over a non-person looks nice on paper, but what it actually means is the person might disagree with you or feel resistant to your wishes. The person's work takes time. The person is a human being, and that means feelings are involved. And most important, the person desires a paycheck. Now our question becomes a little more clear. Why exactly should we rely on people to do our work? After all, it's hard to compete with a machine that doesn't go on strike and doesn't ask for a pay raise. We know that our resistance to going AI first means choosing the person over the non-person, but it's in our attempt to justify this choice where things start to go awry. And I think he's tapping into something important here. Though most of us would say, hey, we want to live in a people-first culture, if we ask, well, why should I choose a person to do my work? Oftentimes the answer is, well, because, you know, they do better quality work, or it's a highly skilled function. Only a true artist can design this logo. AI is not going to do as good a job. The problem is those arguments are all functional arguments. They're all based on the level of quality. And the problem is if AI continues to get better and better, can't you see a moment where eventually it might produce the same kind of quality work that a human could produce? So if our only reason for choosing a person is the person does better quality work, a good skeptic is going to say, well, for now, but 5 years from now, that may not be the case. And so does that mean 5 years from now, we ignore the person and go with the AI tool? Later on in this article, Samuel Hurd wants to point out that the question can't be solved functionally. The issue is really teleology. We need to have a vision that people exist for a purpose and that meaningful work is part of the purpose for which people exist. And actually living in a society with other people who together are contributing to the flourishing of one another is part of what contributes to meaning and purpose and human flourishing in the world. And therefore, inherently, people are more valuable and more important than AI. So our answer can't just be they do better work. Our answer needs to be substantively, they are a different kind of entity. People are for something different than what a machine is for. Now, he draws from a Wendell Berry article as he goes on and writes this, and I'm not going to go into the Wendell Berry article, but his point is, or I guess it's an essay, not an article, for those of you Wendell Berry fans who are like, hey, that guy wrote essays. He didn't write articles. Sorry for dishonoring Wendell Berry. But the point that Samuel Hurd makes is that the personhood is the essential quality here, and that Christians need to have an inherent value for personhood. So we need to be able to say people, even if they cost more, are more valuable than an AI tool. And so we want to live in a world where people are free to bring meaning and purpose to the world, rather than living in a world where we are after maximum efficiency and maximum productivity at minimum cost. Because in that world, all that matters is the economic bottom line, and we're not taking into account the flourishing of human beings. At the end of this article, Samuel Hurd asks us to consider a couple of possibilities. He said, think about these scenarios. Two people begin chatting on a dating app. Each one, seeking to put their best foot forward, decides to consult an LLM to craft their message. Soon, both are copying and pasting text into their conversation. One LLM talking to another. A student overwhelmed by an assignment decides to use an AI chatbot to write his essay. A teacher overwhelmed by deadlines and the amount of work piling up runs her students' essays through an AI chatbot to grade their papers. A pastor, pressed for time and struggling through a text, gives his congregation an AI-generated sermon. A congregant, out on Sunday and too busy to listen during the week, decides to feed the audio to a chatbot to generate a summary of the message. A hiring manager, tired of sifting through applications, allows an AI model to evaluate candidates. A job candidate looking to get an edge over other applicants uses an AI model to craft a compelling resume and cover letter. He points out, in each circumstance, people have been made obsolete. Maybe not completely, but at least momentarily. No person actually did anything here. No person is contributing or benefiting from one another. These individuals have, at least for a second, made themselves unnecessary, both to each other and to the broader community. Expand these examples to a much larger scale, and you have the workings of an AI-first culture, one in which the necessity and value of people are not guaranteed. The things that are efficient are kept. The things that are messy get left behind. What are people for? Nothing, apparently. Again, I'm willing to bet that most of us don't want this, but our answer is not to begin comparing our output and productivity levels to those of our machines. That's where we go wrong. For in the act of comparing ourselves to our non-person counterparts, we have already assumed our value as being equal to theirs. We have suggested both to ourselves and to others that people can indeed be made irrelevant. Had any of the people or businesses mentioned above stopped for just one second to ask, what are people for anyway? It's possible they could have recognized that a person exists for a greater purpose than that of a machine, and that a person's work, though messy and sometimes inefficient, may be of more real value than anything generated through artificial means. I think that challenge, that call, is what a Christian anthropology puts before us. As Christians, we must be people who say a person's work is of more real value than that generated through artificial means. And so what we want to fight for as Christians is personhood and person-to-person interaction. We don't want to live in a world where we're using LLMs to craft our texts to one another. I don't want to live in a world where I use AI to write a sermon and you use AI to listen to a summary of my sermon. We want to live in a world where there is a person on either side of that interaction, where we are interacting humanly with one another. We want to live in a people-first world. And that's going to require, in various ways, that we resist the leaking of AI into every aspect of our lives. Now, I cannot answer for you, well, then where is the boundary with my personal use of AI? In my work, for what I do, how should I and shouldn't I interact with AI? rather than answering that question with a set of rules, I'm trying to answer that question with a principle that Samuel Hurd lays out, which is, how do we live in and strive for and honor a people first kind of world? That might look different in various industries and as far as how you think about your interaction with AI. But I think those four examples he gave are interesting, where you think about a world where a student is using AI to write a paper and a teacher is using AI to grade the paper. The student and teacher aren't interacting with one another as people. Or a situation where a hiring manager is using an AI model to evaluate candidates and an applicant is using AI to craft a resume. Those two people are not interacting with each other. So we want to strive for and aim for a world where we are interacting as humans one with another, and where AI then sits in its proper place as a tool to further human-to-human connection and interaction, rather than as a tool to replace human beings. Now, it is certainly true that there are going to be aspects of our society where AI does replace human work. There are tasks and places where AI will perhaps do it more efficiently than humans. And so businesses will say, all right, as those stats I read at the beginning of the podcast, all right, we're going to eliminate some people from our workforce because these jobs are going to now be done by AI. If that happens to you and you're a Christian, you're going to have to find a job in another field, right? It's displacing. It's disheartening. It's a bummer to lose your job and be replaced by some kind of robot or program or tool. But the fact is, even if that happens to us individually, what we need to strive for and work for together is a world that is a people-first world. So that just gives a simple vision for part of the ethic of how we ought to engage artificial intelligence. Now, I want to end this podcast by drawing in this article from The New Yorker, which makes an interesting observation that I think pertains to how we ought to sort of be skeptical of all the hype around AI. I'll read you now from the article in the New Yorker on August 25th, 2025. Almost 3 years since OpenAI released its ChatGPT chatbot, we may be facing a new economic paradox. According to a recent survey carried out by economists at Stanford, Clemson, and the World Bank, almost half of all workers, 45.6% to be precise, were using AI tools. And yet a new study from a team of researchers associated with MIT's Media Lab reports, despite $30 to $40 billion in enterprise investment into generative AI, this report uncovers a surprising result in that 95% of organizations are getting zero return. The study's authors examined more than 300 public AI initiatives and announcements and interviewed more than 50 company executives. They defined a successful AI investment as one that had been deployed beyond the pilot phase and had generated some measurable financial return or marked gain in productivity after 6 months. Just 5% integrated AI pilots are extracting millions in value, while the vast majority remain stuck with no measurable profit and loss impact. So what they are saying is, for companies who have spent $30 to $40 billion overall of spending on AI, that has generated no measurable results in their profits. And the article basically points out, if that continues, that's not a good sign for the AI companies, because the only thing that is going to keep businesses investing in AI is if it makes a difference on their bottom line. If a company is not making more profit by investing in AI, eventually that company is going to stop investing in AI. The article goes on to say, the MIT study garnered a lot of attention, and after the initial raft of news stories about the research, a report emerged that the Media Lab, which has ties to many technology companies, was quietly restricting access to it. Messages that I left with the organization's communications office and two of the report's authors went unreturned. Although the report is more nuanced than some news coverage made out, it certainly raises questions about the grand economic narrative that has underpinned the tech boom since November 2022, when OpenAI released ChatGPT. The short version of this narrative is that the economy-wide diffusion of generative AI would be bad for workers, but great for companies, because it would generate a big leap in productivity and, by extension, profits. It's possible that the novelty and complexity of generative AI may be holding some companies back, but there's another possible explanation for the disappointing record highlighted in the Media Lab report. For many established businesses, generative AI, at least in its current incarnation, simply isn't all it's been cracked up to be. It's excellent for brainstorming and first drafts, but it doesn't retain knowledge of client preferences or learn from previous edits, one respondent to the survey said. It repeats the same mistakes and requires extensive context input for each session. For high-stakes work, I need a system that accumulates knowledge and improves over time. The article concludes this way: the adoption of AI throughout the economy could well be a lengthy process. In Silicon Valley, people like to move fast and break things, but economic history tells us that even the most transformative technologies can't be exploited to maximum effect until infrastructure, skills, and products that can complement them are developed, and this can be a long process. During the commercialization of the internet, many of the ultimate winners didn't emerge until after the dot-com bubble had burst in 2000. There is no guarantee that history will repeat itself, but investors who are still riding the AI boom might be wise to cash in some more of their chips. So what does this article mean for Christians listening? Well, what it's saying is that these companies are not seeing return on investment from their investments in AI, and that that could mean that it's not going to be the industry-wide disruptor that everybody thinks it's going to be. Now, the Silicon Valley response to this article has been predictable because all the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs have said, well, of course, because it's still early. Just give us time. In fact, they've been sort of sarcastic about this MIT study. There's some memes that have been posted about this article. People are sort of bashing this article, saying, well, this author doesn't even understand how this kind of change happens and how long it takes. But at the very least, what this article surfaces is the possibility that there might be an AI bust, that all the economic incentives and energy being put behind AI may not prove to have the payoff that people think it will. And so as Christians, this should make us appropriately measured in our responses and reactions to AI. It's quite possible that AI will not be as disruptive as people think it will be. It's quite possible that we don't need to embrace the sort of doomsday scenarios that some people have in mind. In fact, it's quite possible that there will be a bust around AI similar to the dot-com bubble that burst in 2000, and that could have a meaningful effect on our society. It's also possible, as this study points out, that it's just going to take a lot of time for the whole ecosystem of our industries to change around AI, and so that the payoff of this technology won't be seen for quite some time. But either way, this article gives Christians a lot of reasons to be somewhat skeptical of the claims we hear about artificial intelligence and somewhat slow in our adoption of it. Now, I just wanted you to know that data, because I find it interesting when data seems to suggest a counter narrative to the one that's commonly promoted. But more importantly, as Christian listeners, is the insight from the Samuel Hurd article, which is we want to fight for and advocate for a people-first economy, not an AI-first economy. And so you might ask, in your field of work, in your occupation, in the world you live in, what would it mean for you as a Christian to champion a people-first approach to profit and productivity rather than an AI-first approach? You may be in a company where you don't have capacity to influence the decisions that are made at the highest level. But I think as Christians in general, our posture in society and in the world should be, we want to be a people-first people, not an AI-first people. And I thought this article did a good job of raising that question. So I hope that helps you think a little bit more deeply about the influence of AI and how we as Christians ought to respond in a world that is always pressuring us and pushing us to use AI, to try this new AI tool, to adopt AI. It's fascinating how even in your email inbox now, there's not, you know, everything is like, do you want to use an AI generated response to that email? It is getting sort of forced into a lot of our lives and tools that we use anyway. And so it's good and wise for Christians to think about how we want to use AI and how we want our posture toward this to be in a world that's rapidly changing and a world that's rapidly adopting these technologies. As we always say, the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. And so if you're a Christian or a church leader who serves in another context, as always, we want to thank you for listening in. And we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.